Eldabe Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Keldabi Talk Radio. I'm your host, Hikari, and joining me this month is Bofani.
Hello.
Jaren.
Hello.
And Juro.
Hello.
Only two topics to cover for club announcements this month. For any of you that are Hawkers members, the self-nominations for the Guildmaster is currently open. Go see all the details posted by Caden in the Hawkers row. And then for all OMs, the Galactic Senate representative for the club is currently in the nomination phase. Go see the official member board for all information. So this month we've decided to do something a little bit different. We're not going to have a single topic that we talk through. I think the 3D printing last episode was quite exhaustive in Jaren's time, so we decided to give him a little bit of a rest this episode.
It was exhaustive on my throat, yeah.
And with the barrage of Star Wars news that's floating about, we thought we'd just have fun going through a few topics and dissecting them. First up, we're going to start with a new segment that we hope will engage you and be a positive step moving forward. And I'm going to throw over to the education officer to start us off.
Hello, Bofani here. I just wanted to remind folks that we do have some training programs that are available for officers, and that's going to be Ruslar training and Alarad training, and in the Jad Halls.
With that,
yes, sir.
Sorry, but I was going to ask. With that training, I understand that the format or cadence of the Ruslar training is something that you're experimenting with at the moment.
It is. Currently, the Ruslar training is set up as sort of a pre-app booster. So it guides Ruslar in giving pre-app feedback. And I want to try to change it around so that it gives Ruslar more of a base level so that they can go through and help their UMs and OMs be able to adjust things like their soft parts or their kit fit, and to make sure that they have all of the base requirements that they need to be able to do their job and to be able to give the feedback that they need to be able to give.
Where are the signups available for that at the moment?
Currently, Ruslar signup is in the Ruslar section. We haven't been going to the announcement because we just want the Ruslars to be able to check in with the Ruslar section so that they can see that we are being more interactive there. And I currently have a waitlist set up through that section so that people can sign up as they see it. And it's going to be every couple of months there's going to be training available until the new stuff is written.
Okay, so is there any consideration given just throwing out ideas? I understand that you sometimes have up to 5 separate classrooms worth of training that can be running in parallel, which, being a former education team member, can take quite a strain on the training team at times.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any consideration given to perhaps either smaller classes or less classes, but almost have them in a constantly rolling state?
Yes, we are currently rolling out a new program where we're doing a rotational, where we have 2 or 3 instructors and 2 to 3 instructor aides. And we're going to start training every 4 weeks and have no more than 10 Ruslar so that we can actually give feedback in a timely manner, and so that the Ruslar that are in the classes can get personal information, personal feedback, and advice on how to proceed.
I think that would be an excellent point in improving engagement, as I know you've been working hard since taking on the role. I don't know what your experience was, Jaren, but I know when I was a Ruslar and these trainings were ongoing, they were fantastic when being run, but the time between them sometimes left people in the Ruslar board wanting more regular mm-hmm. training. So the fact that's something you're looking at addressing, I think, would be really good for engagement there.
I got quite lucky myself, and I think my training came just shortly after I stepped up to the Ruslar. But I know that we've got a potential new wrestler over here at the moment who will be stepping up soon. So knowing that he'll be able to drop in on a confirmed basis will be really useful, especially for us helping to kind of help him hit the floor running.
It also helps the education team for the training department because a lot of the time we're trying to build a lot more content, and that can be very high in the burnout rate. So being able to rotate people in and out of training and then back into writing tutorials and things gives everyone opportunity to be able to contribute without burning out.
And then I wanted to touch a little bit on Alarad training, and kind of, I guess, more also for Roos as well. Do you know if there's any plans to kind of have somewhat more open to people that might not be in the role yet but are interested in the role, to kind of get an idea, especially as we're starting to come up towards the end of the year, if people want to start thinking about maybe stepping up for a position within their own clan?
For Alarad, we don't currently have that set up, but for Roosler training, we do have that available if their Roosler Solis, current Roosler Solis, thinks that they're going to be a good fit for that, then we can actually accommodate official members to be taking the Roosler training.
Excellent.
I think what I will say there, Juro, I think to touch on what you highlighted, if people are considering, we do have all of the clan constitution documents, which do go into quite some detail on what each role does involve. Your local clan officers may be doing additional duties on top of what's required of them, but that would give anyone considering that role at least a baseline of what's expected to come with that.
Okay, cool.
So speaking of those documents, Bo, I believe there are various resources available to OMs, UMs, foundlings, anyone on an administrative team.
Yes, in the JAD Halls of Knowledge, just under the Trading Station section on the forums, we have a lot of that information, and we actually just posted a new forum directory so that people can see where they can nominate Ramacad members, where they can contact certain members of certain teams, and where you can find all of your tutorials and training documents, especially for CAR Officers Academy and any of the OM guides.
I must admit, I find myself quite often going to those sections to find forms and directories, and especially the club documents.
Yes, we have all of them.
I was speaking to someone yesterday who serves on an administrative team, and they were asking questions about my role and what it encompasses. And I directed them to that thread and to those links because they weren't aware that all of our jobs are listed on what it is we actually do.
Yeah, and we are actually putting together a form right now to show what each cabinet and ICC member, where they fall at in our club hierarchy. So that'll be in there soon, I think.
So for any of our foundlings listening that might be new to the club, I understand your team has recently expanded.
Yes, our Foundling Guides team, that was recently our welcome team. They're the members of the education team that are in the Introduce Yourself Here threads, which I believe is getting turned into the Foundling Foundling section of the forums.
Yes, there are various initiatives that are going to be coming up over the next month or two to try and improve navigatability and visibility, especially for our founding members, to make sure they're properly welcomed in the club and can find that starting resource to get them going.
Yes, and our founding teams is being set up to be able to assist with that. And if there's questions, they have access to help desk tickets, and they have their own section of the forum where they'll be able to answer Q&As and things like that as well.
That'll be a great addition, I believe. If we can get people starting off right, I'm sure the club will grow from there.
Definitely.
Well, thank you for that, Bo Fanny. As I said, this is a new segment that we're trialing out each month, a topic from the education officer to talk about, be it kit building, hints and tips, upcoming trainings, We hope you are enjoying it. And as always, any feedback that you have for any aspect of the podcast, we have threads set up on the forum for exactly that purpose. We want to give you topics that you want to be listening to. So moving on to a plethora of Star Wars news this month, who'd like to kick off with the first topic?
I can jump in there. So first thing I want to cover is Bob Iger recently had an interview with CNBC, I believe, talking a lot about kind of giving a little bit more of a pulse on the Disney properties as a whole. And one of the things that was mentioned was a little bit more of a pull back or a slowdown to how much Marvel and Star Wars content they are putting out.
We've already seen a few projects being put on the back burner. I think that Rogue Squadron's almost completely disappeared off the timeline, hasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
It's a difficult one. I know we all love to see new stuff, but there is a point where it's too much. And I suppose we don't really appreciate how much it costs to produce, distribute, market new things constantly over and over again. So there's a massive budgetary considerations here that we don't even look at. But are people just going to get bored? And I mean, we as a family watch most of the Star Wars and Marvel content fairly religiously. But the last couple of big cinema releases, I mean, the last time I saw a full cinema was probably Endgame. And I know that obviously we're in a difficult economic climate and stuff as well at the moment, but they're just not drawing the audiences that they did before.
And yeah.
Even with some of the TV series, we're not rushing to watch them. They're being put to watch on a Sunday afternoon, not as they release.
Yeah, especially, I mean, if you start looking at the like box office to cost to make a lot of these films that have come out recently, it definitely seems like they're running more in the negative than they used to. And I don't know if that's necessarily just because of, you know, financial hardships, people being a little bit more picky with what they see in the cinema, or if maybe even the fact that Disney Plus has become so readily available and movies that were, you know, in the cinema just a couple months ago are now on to Disney Plus. I wonder if that's playing a little bit of a contributing role, because it's one of those things of, you know, do I want to spend $40-$50 going to the cinema to see this thing once, or do I want to just wait until it's in a, you know, digital home release where even if I buy it, I'm spending half the price and I get to have a personal movie experience? Because a lot of the, you know, a lot of home theater setups are also easier to attain now than they used to be. So it's, I can get a similar, you know, screen to space ratio that I can with the theater at home, and I can do it while, you know, on my phone and in the pajamas.
Yes.
Yeah, I must admit, I have stopped going to the cinema, and that's not because I don't enjoy the experience, but the experience has just been priced out for my liking. For the two of us to go to the cinema, it costs more than a month and a half's worth of streaming service. And when you consider the cost versus content, it's just not comparable.
Yeah, exactly. And like another thing too is, especially as I've gotten older and more into the workforce, it's, I don't have time. I start running out of time to, you know, do a movie on the theater's schedule versus my own.
Yes, very much so.
And for my household, the spontaneity of being able to go to the movies is no longer something that we can do on a whim. We have to schedule it out because my local theater needs reservations.
And I think it's a way that a lot of it's going. So my wife and I recently subscribed to Netflix, and even though we pay for Disney Plus, because there's so much content on the other platform that we haven't yet watched, I find myself barely turning Disney Plus on now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's another thing of there's so much out there to watch that it's you know, screen time starts to become an issue just because it's, you know, that same time factor I'm talking about going to the movies, it's the same for at home. I still have to figure out when I can. Like, I haven't even gotten to the latest episode of Secret Invasion this week. That'll probably be tonight with dinner sort of thing.
It's just too much content to choose from.
Yeah, I must admit, I've watched the first episode of Secret Invasion, and what are we, time of recording, is there three episodes, if not four?
I believe they're on the fourth this week, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas if you compare that to something like The Mandalorian, or what I'm anticipating to be Ahsoka, that will be on the day viewing. And I don't know whether that's a bias in our love of what the content will be, or what it is, but... I think Marvel for me is a tricky one, because after everything they built up for Endgame, things have fallen a bit flat since then.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard to top, what, a decade of building?
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be something that happens overnight, so I think in a best-case scenario, you see things do kind of slow down a little bit more. Hopefully they take their time building out a future storyline, and then eventually maybe they work their way back up to a huge on-screen event like, you know, Infinity War and Endgame was.
I also wonder whether I'm going to say grown up with it over the last 10 years, appreciating all of our actual ages, where the main cast are now rotating out and new characters are coming through. I wonder if there's a bit of parallel there to say the people in Star Wars that are really attached to original trilogy compared to prequel trilogy compared to sequel trilogy. Perhaps this phase 4 to phase 5 shift is going to be something similar.
Right. Where we're also, you might have people that are, you know, oh, I was fans of the Infinity Saga, and now the Kang Dynasty multiverse, yep, saga that they're kind of doing now, if that might be something that, you know, as we're starting to age out of their target, they're starting to get newer fan bases in.
Mm. But then I don't know how the others feel. I know that when Loki season 2 happens, that's going to be I'm definitely watching that on release day every week.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that really does just show I perhaps just don't have that affinity to Nick Fury, and maybe that's why Secret Invasion's possibly not getting the viewership.
I would 100% agree with you on Loki season 2. I will be all over that. I mean, I've watched the first series probably 3 or 4 times, but I used to be a massive comic book fan until, again, that started getting far too pricey, because it just became about big event after big event after big event. And I went through the whole Secret War saga, which was massive, absolutely massive. So many spin-offs and tie-ins and everything. And I thoroughly enjoyed that story, and I was... When I heard it was announced for live action, I was, yeah, super hyped for it, but it just hasn't hit right. I don't know.
So I think what I'm hearing here is, as much as people may not want to hear it, Bob Iger might be actually having his finger on the pulse of what's going on.
Yeah,
and it's unfortunate, because, like we've talked about, it's I'm always in for more Star Wars content, but it's also the general populace is not as into Star Wars as the rest of us, unfortunately. So it might be, you know, sure, we're, you know, the dedicated fans are going to go see it, but what do you get beyond that?
So if we turn our attention to content that has been filmed that is due for release, I think we can all get excited and behind all the materials that they're publishing for Ahsoka.
I wasn't expecting another big trailer drop like that.
I wasn't expecting it either.
That was surprising.
So, for those of you that have watched the trailer, is there anything in particular that you have picked up on? Because there's one thing that I noticed twice that happened that's got me wondering about potential character crossovers.
Who are you thinking?
Anakin.
He's got to be in there somewhere.
Yeah, I think he was very, very well received in Obi-Wan. I think they also did that very well. I don't feel like him and his character in that overshadowed the titular character at all. So from the vague details that I understand, the quote-unquote Sith, as we don't know whether they really are Sith or just... red lightsaber carrying force sensitive users. We can go on to presume they've survived Order 66 and almost become bounty hunters at this point. In the trailer, there's an interaction between them and Ahsoka, where they make reference to Anakin speaking of her. So that shows they've got some history tie-in there. But you also had Ahsoka talking to Sabine, where she talked about never finishing her training with her master.
Yep.
So it just seems two very strong tie-backs to not have him in there, even if it's a passing scene.
I personally have not seen the trailer in full. I have seen some clips, some stills and whatnot. I'm very interested in some of the expanded lore that we're going to get from it. I'm really excited to see E-Wings making a return. That was a nice surprise.
Yeah. I'm going to say the words spoiler warning before I say the next bit, just in case people do want to avoid it. But Sabine is swinging around a familiar lightsaber, and it appears that she's been formally trained in it. So good luck to the approval team for the new CRL that's going to be required there. another lightsaber wielding Mando added to the very small list.
I would say as much as we joke about the problems it causes seeing Mando swinging lightsabers, I guess it's going to fall into that same category as Bo and Din. It's canon only.
Yeah. So this would be what, version 7 or 8 for Sabine CRLs? I know there's a few out there.
I think every season of Rebels has a different version. The epilogue is a different version. But yep. Then you have the special kits like the Lothal combat gear, where it's armoured. So, and I can see, even just from the trailer, there is a big onus on her cutting her hair. So you already know there's going to be live-action long hair, live-action short hair. I think someone's going to have fun with that list. Sorry, Juro.
Oh, that's all right. I also very much enjoy the homage to the old R2-D2 droid head for one of the droids that's shown in the trailer as well. Somebody pointed out the new droid that's in that E-Wing that I was talking about is the it's built very similarly to the old original Kenner R2-D2 head.
It's a really nice touch.
Yeah. It's one of the things I love about Filoni's touch on the Star Wars universe is he pays a lot of attention to how can we slip in some of these older vintage toys, you know, in bits and pieces here and there. So getting to see, you know, like we had the old troop transport that, you know, never showed up in the original movies, but made it into Rebels, made it into Mando. It's very fun to see those sort of things.
Obviously, we also got to finally get a good look at Thrawn himself.
Ah, yes. Yes, getting to see the face instead of just the back of the head.
It's going to be a difficult character to pull off that will appeal to everyone. It was done so well in Rebels, but I think it's one of those characters like Revan, when you've read the books and played the games, that everyone has their own kind of image in their head.
I think we can draw some parallels here, because we already know that Katie Sackhoff has spoken about needing to reanalyze Bo to bring it to live action. Mm. The Thrawn actor is the voice character, so he's already got a leg up there in knowing his own cadence, which he's already addressed he will change for live action because it doesn't work as well the way he did it in animation. But I just love the fact that they've contoured him because he's got such a distinct look in Rebels. And I think when you look at the makeup they've applied, they have fully contoured him to try and replicate that look.
Yeah, I will say he seems like he's one of the characters that has made the jump from animation to live action fairly well. I know there's been some unhappy opinions over past appearances from characters that made the jump, especially with Grand Inquisitor and the other Inquisitor. I forget what his name is. If it was
fifth brother.
Yeah, fifth brother. Both of them. In Kenobi, a lot of people didn't appreciate the translation for live action.
See, whereas I watched things like that and thought, yeah, I like that, that makes sense. Is it true to the comics? Is it true to animation? No. But I've also built a canon costume based on animation, and I can tell you what, I'm not that proportion.
Yep. Yeah, well, especially with Rebels, because Rebels was so stylized in its character design.
Oh, heavily so. So, looking ahead to future projects, there seems to be a flurry of news coming out about Acolyte. It looks like they're doing some PR materials and a few press tours. So I'm still not sure what the exact timeline for that is. But I just liked the quote, there'll be more Jedi than you've seen in any other Star Wars content.
That's exciting.
Well, considering the battle you got in Attack of the Clones, that's quite an old claim.
Yeah.
I mean, so we're probably looking at going back to what, High Republic era or early Republic era, when the Jedi Temple or possibly Tython is in place. Hard to tell, really.
Yeah, it's been said that this will be in live action terms, the earliest they've set anything in any of the timelines. I believe it is that High Republic era.
Yeah, I think this is about 200 years before Phantom.
That sounds
Or at least
right,
that's then. What that era is.
For me, I'm just quite excited to see something that is from the pure perspective of the Sith. I think we can all agree we've had a lot of content that is from the perspective of the Jedi. Everything is normally from the perspective of the Jedi. For me, The Mandalorian really showed how well you can move that viewpoint and see it from a perspective of people don't care about Force-sensitive users, let's tell a new story.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now we get to see it from what traditionally gets called the villain.
I just hope that they stick with the villain being the villain for at least a few episodes of the series.
So no redemption arc.
Yeah, or at least if they do a redemption arc, it should be something that's earned, and not that they've confirmed a second season, but I definitely don't think it's something that should just... by the end of the first season, our bad guy is now good.
What about would you consider it an interesting take if they tell the story from the perspective of the quote-unquote villain? Because I love the old Disney adage of every villain is the hero of their own story.
Mm.
Where they tell the story from the perspective of the Sith. They believe that they are right and righteous in what they are doing and that they are correct, and yet somehow make it plainly clear that when the audience is watching it, you just go, this is wrong. We can see that you are the villain without you playing the stereotypical villain.
I think that would work. I don't know if Lucasfilm and Disney will have, I guess, the guts to do that. Just because I know that that's falling a little bit more in line with, like, HBO-level content.
Possibly, yeah.
Depending on how dark they make this Sith go.
Darth Bane would be a good example of a storyline like that.
Yeah.
So, here's a pure theory point. This isn't necessarily news. This is something that sparked a thought when I was reading... some other topics. So, The Mando Season 3. I'm still going to say, spoiler warning for anyone that hasn't watched it, but I'll be shocked given our target audience if you haven't. So, I've always liked the title The Mandalorian. It's never given any indication that Din is actually the main character. Because let's face it, it's not called The Adventures of Din and Grogu.
True.
Fair enough.
So... Season 3, we saw a very heavy onus on Bo. Which, again, you could argue, well, she was the Mandalorian this season.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, given how Season 3 finished, they are almost going to put Din on a backseat for a while?
It's possible. Yeah, I don't know that the fans of the show will... Of course, you know, outside of, you know, our Star Wars fans that, you know, give us anything, we'll take it. I don't know if the fans outside of that will stand for it. I feel like I saw a lot of backlash over this last season being primarily on Bo. I personally thoroughly enjoyed it, especially because Bo was one of my favorite characters pretty much ever since I saw her. But I don't know that show can handle another season where potentially Din even goes further towards the background.
Okay, here's a bit of a counter question for you. The fans outside of our sphere that may have been given that backlash, do you think their backlash was really over Din or was over Grogu? So, like, will Din just be the conduit for Grogu to be in it?
I think that's also a good point. I don't actually know. I know that Grogu is the moneymaker for this show. That's a given.
Yeah.
That's what sells the toys. That's what drives a lot of the merchandise. That's kind of why he got pushed to the forefront. And I feel like that might have been part of the problem for this season. I feel like, especially with how they handled his return with Book of Boba, I think that might be a little bit of an issue, because I personally really like to see Din without Grogu.
I concur with that.
I think that I like the two of them together, like, don't get me wrong, but I feel like we get some of the best content story-wise and character-wise from Din when there isn't Grogu being Grogu on the side.
See, for me personally, I'd love to see it branch out slightly, because I'd love to have a 1-2 movie and 3-episode arc based around the Armorer.
Yeah.
I think there's such a deep story, just it feels like it's almost there ready to bubble and be told. And it would have been great to see a bit more of Paz.
I mean, they've given us such a unique and massive addition to kind of Mandalorian lore with the Armorer and the Covert. And yeah, just to really kind of dig into that, even if it's just further cliffhangers, or just leading the story a little further on, I think, yeah, there's a lot of people would sign up for that.
Do you think that it would see success taking a similar story structure to Clone Wars, where it was 3-4 episode arcs that just kind of bounce around from character to character?
Oh, that is an interesting one. Because I found that final season of Clone Wars 7,
yep.
Mm-hmm. It did that 3-4 episode structure, and I almost found that I ended up with 3-4 episodes that I just didn't enjoy. Because if I didn't get hooked into that storyline in that first episode, I knew, right, I'm basically waiting a month for the next arc to see if that holds my interest more.
Yeah. But on the flip side, there are people that had a similar, you know, feeling, but with that episode where they liked it.
Yes. Oh, no, I completely concede that.
Yeah. So I think that might be a good way to split the production costs amongst characters without alienating entirely, fans of, Din or fans of Bo or fans of the Armorer, you know, that sort of thing. You could still have it, and you could even have it be where instead of it being 3 or 4 episodes, you just get a 2 or 3 at most, you know?
I think the talent they have there for writing and world building and storytelling, it could easily be 3 or 4 sets of 3 or 4 episodes all focusing on different characters that are all still telling different views of one overarching storyline.
Yeah, I just thought it was an interesting thought point to see what way would the viewers like to see it go, as you just never know what we're actually going to get. I just think with the potential of Bo going out into the universe and finding so many more Mandalorians, do we want a show focused around the budding adventures of Din and Grogu, or do we want to see an ever-expanding universe and what that may open doors to?
It's the wider universe that has always appealed to me.
Well, not necessarily wider universe related. I see with these cutbacks and slowing down of content, there are actors that don't want to see their characters retired. So I don't know if you've seen about Tamura Morrison, how's he quoted it, stopping past LA to show his face.
I do very much enjoy seeing Tamura in his numerous roles within Star Wars now.
So how about we break this down into two halves then? Boba Fett as a character, has he got a place in modern storytelling? And then the flip side of that is, are there other characters that he could step into that we'd rather see?
As far as Boba goes, I think yes, with the proper storyline behind it. I don't know that the structuring that Book of Boba had really had a chance to do that character justice, especially a character that was so influential to the saga and its expanded universe and community that it has. I mean, you know, we wouldn't exist without him, sort of thing. So there's a certain level of care that I think just really needs to be taken whenever you're working with these, you know, quote unquote legacy characters. And I think that Boba does have potential. There's a lot of things that I saw from the series that I very much enjoyed that I think would be really good to expand upon. But I don't know that we touched them properly or at all with the content that we got in Book of Boba.
From the other side of it, the obvious callback for him is Rex. And yeah, there's great opportunities to drop in there with the Ahsoka series.
So picking up on some of those Book of Boba Fett points, I think I'm inclined to agree with you, Juro. I can't say the Book of Boba was my favourite. I haven't exactly sat down and rewatched The Mandalorian, but picking between the two, I would always take The Mandalorian over Book of Boba.
Yeah.
I liked seeing some of his, what I'm going to call, recovery arc. I think him in the desert with the Tuskar and all of those storylines were story rich.
Yes.
But I felt that him, his storylines as the Daimon, fell flat a bit. I can't say that I connected with them.
Yeah, I very much, I'm very disappointed in how the Tusken arc kind of came to an end in that story. I very much enjoyed getting to see that and seeing a more indigenous people's representation in Star Wars. I really enjoyed seeing that. I also agree. I don't know that the Daimyo Boba is exactly the way to go. I could see him definitely being like, no, I need to, you know, push the pikes out of Tatooine. But I don't know that the Daimyo image is exactly what Boba kind of lines up with.
I think it would be fun to see Boba be able to get with some of the Mandalorians to battle the pikes.
Yeah, yeah, especially post season 3 of Mando, getting to see all of those Mandalorians come around. I think it would have been really cool to see him have some interactions. And I think there's potential for a great story of Boba coming to terms with, you know, whether he is or isn't Mandalorian. I know that's been, you know, quite the debate for some time amongst the fans, and especially even himself saying, you know, oh, I'm just, you know, that armor is mine just because it was my father's. But it's a good opportunity to dive into what makes you a Mandalorian, which I think is something that all of the shows have been touching on very well, is, you know, if your father was Mandalorian and you're, you know, cloned and or born from a Mandalorian, does that automatically make you one?
Can the reverse be true?
Right.
So obviously Din being rescued and folded in. He wasn't necessarily born of Mandalorian ways, but I think you'd have a tough time arguing that he isn't.
Yeah.
I also like that the Book of Boba Fett gave the original trilogy fans a little bit of closure with seeing him come out of the Sarlacc.
Oh, yeah.
I totally agree with you. And I think that aspect of the arc is what I really enjoyed consuming from that content. I just think, maybe I've just got an idealised view on what I think Boba Fett is, but it's him, his spacecraft, and bounty hunting.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to portray bounty hunting when you're staying in one place.
For me, it's like you see him being the soldier that he was in Empire and everything. But he had this very big dramatic thing happen, and he's restructured his life to basically give himself that redemption arc.
Okay. So it sounds like there is a hunger for that content. To do it with Boba would have to be something special. But to do his clone aspect, especially like the little glances in Obi-Wan, yep. I think that would be a fantastic opportunity to expand on now.
Very much so. Especially, I would very much like to hear and find out what has happened with Cody. Does Cody come to terms with, you know, the chip and what he did to Kenobi? Is that something that we'll get to see potentially in, you know, Bad Batch, or maybe if they do their follow up to the Kenobi series, will we get to see those sort of things? I think that would be something I'd really like to dive deeper into.
Okay. Well, I think that's given us a lot to think about on where he may or may not have a place in the universe at this time. So I see in other news, there's a fair few series picking up Emmy nominations, even with everything that's going on in the current climate. So
I saw that all three of the more recent series have had quite a long list of Emmy nominations. I think almost all of them picked up at least, what, five to six each? And I think Andor picked up, was it 8 or 9, something like that? One of them picked up quite a few nominations.
Wow.
Well, there's 23 nominations across 21 categories. But I think what people will miss that's important to highlight is, yes, the three main shows that have been released this past year have all got nominations, but so's Light and Magic directly.
Oh, well, yeah, they innovated the screens. I can't remember what they're called.
The volume.
The volume, that by itself is huge.
Yes. Well, there's so many movies that have picked up that technology since. In this round of Emmy nominations, Light and Magic's actually been nominated for an outstanding music composition for a documentary series. But yeah, other than that, I think Andor's picked up 8 nominations by itself. Obi-Wan's up for 5, and The Mando's up for 9.
That's impressive.
Yeah,
it is.
So despite them saying that the content's getting diluted and the content's getting slowed down,
the quality's still there.
The quality is definitely still there.
Yeah, they've had a lot of really impressive innovations and like the costumes and everything, like everything still looks and feels like amazing, you know, Star Wars content, but also just TV content, period. It's very, very good quality.
Yeah, even the Andor is a standout for me. I think you had some outstanding visuals, some outstanding storyline that's obviously playing into some much bigger things.
And such a wide like categories like of where the show took you, because you had your, you know, more down and rugged, you know, planets, but then you also had, you know, high fashion and stuff like that within Coruscant.
I think for me, I mean, there are two standout moments, and I won't spoil it because I know some people still haven't watched it. There are two speeches in there that really just jumped out for me. One was quite a long-running soliloquy about the ethics of rebellion and various other things, which is absolutely phenomenal. And the second one was literally 3 words. And a lot of people know what those 3 words were. But the way they were delivered the way they were done. It's just memorable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, both of those speeches that you're talking about are quite good. I have yet to go through and rewatch all of Andor, but I have definitely, you know, popped those speeches back up on YouTube a couple times.
Yeah, definitely worth watching again.
So, last month we talked a little bit about the new open world game, Star Wars Outlaws. And I understand, Jura, there's been a little bit of an update on the scale of what's to be expected.
Yes. So the creative director for the game has come out and said that the planet maps are to be huge, quoting that they are expected to be double or even triple of what Assassin's Creed Odyssey's maps were.
That's going to be insane.
I am starting to wonder if I need to upgrade my computer again, even though I upgraded it last year.
I think that might end up being a possibility. As someone who has put many, many, many hours into Odyssey, those zones were big to begin with.
Mm.
So if Outlaws has the perspective to double, if not triple, some of those, even if we just take a mid-size zone, it's going to be an utterly enormous game. And without some sort of land travel, that might be something to think about.
We don't know how many planets we're going to be visiting in Outlaws yet.
No, I think we know of at least 3 different planets, but I don't remember their names off the top of my head. But still, even if you've got just three planets that are of that size, like that's pretty impressive. I mean, even just looking at Jedi Survivor, those maps were fairly extensive in where you could go, and it was of similar planet count. So it's it's quite impressive.
It'd be an interesting story direction on how immersive it feels based on the tools they give you. So just draw some parallels. Bethesda are obviously working on Starfield.
Yep.
Which, although not the same franchise setting, we could look at some of the parallels there with planet hopping. They've come out and confirmed that there will be no on-planet vehicles or wildlife that you can ride.
Nope, you have jetpacks and your feet.
Yes.
So it's going to force you to walk quite a ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's unclear to me at the moment if that means your ship has fixed docking points in the world, or whether, a bit like No Man's Sky, you can literally fly your ship round the planet and land anywhere that you can find flat land.
From what most people seem to be putting forward, there's no free atmospheric flight. You choose a landing zone and you land there, and I guess then a map is, I assume, procedurally generated with a few hand-built assets around a fixed point, which is your ship.
Okay, so it sounds like it will be a fixed border map rather than an open world where you could just manually travel from landing zone A to landing zone B.
Yeah, I think, again, some of the bigger planets will have multiple landing zones, which will likely then be continuous should you wish to go back to them. But you won't, again, like with No Man's Sky or Star Citizen, when it eventually appears, have the full freedom to burn up through the atmosphere and then fly around the planet in orbit, drop down somewhere else and pick somewhere else to land. You will literally pick from a selection of possible landing points. How freeform those are, no one knows yet.
There's part of me that hopes that Outlaws will have space flying, but maybe in the same context that, say, the Lego games have space flying. Your warp from galaxy to galaxy is fixed, but you have some freedom to fly within that galaxy.
I believe we saw some space combat in the last set of trailers they put out.
I mean, having fixed landing points as starports would be in setting with canon. Again, occasional landing points for smuggling opportunities and things, which would work. We don't often see full atmospheric flight in Star Wars. It happens occasionally, but when you think of spaceships, they are in space in Star Wars. That's what it's about.
Yeah, can't disagree with that. Well, we shall have to wait until some more details come out about that then, but overall, that's quite a positive news for me. So, possibly the controversial topic, what do the current strikes in Hollywood mean for Star Wars and our content?
So, I know that with the strike, that's going to impact a lot of, at least for the actor side, it's probably going to be impacting Bad Batch Season 3. I know that they've said some of the voice actors have completed their lines, but with the way that animation works, that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody has completed theirs. So we might be seeing some delays there. And then the new season of Tales of the Jedi, that will probably also get delayed, as I don't know what their status is, but I'm assuming they're probably a little bit behind on recording for that.
I've seen a number of people obviously also questioning off the back of this, will it affect things like con appearances and signing events and things? Will they be fully stepping back from obviously their roles as actors and the public appearances? How far reaching is this?
Yeah, and I'm not familiar with like what you agree to when you are signing for either of these guilds. But I can imagine there's still probably quite a lot of impact to see. Another thing to think about too is if there's any pickups or reshoots or anything like that that may need to happen for stuff like Acolyte or Skeleton Crew, which they've said they've finished shooting, but any like pickups or reshoots, those are going to have to be pushed back or just forgotten about.
Well, I think to look at that Comic-Con impact, San Diego Comic-Con is obviously the big one that comes to mind, especially as it's happening very soon. My understanding is with the actors now going on strike, don't expect to see any celebrities in appearance.
A lot of the studios are out too.
Yep. So yeah. One thing, as before the recording here, I did have a look up on there's an unofficial San Diego SDCC blog, and they highlighted that what some of the studios have been doing is pivoting their panels into screenings. So I believe Good Omens did it when presumably the cast have pulled out. They've pivoted from trying to host a panel into just showing a screening of what has already been filmed and cut and is ready. But they also highlight things like, say, the Family Guy writers. Apparently their rules are quite clear cut where the writers can't come and do the panel because it specifically relates to a studio project.
Right, whereas, and it's a form of promotion.
Yes, whereas they could come and talk generically about writing.
Do you know if that impacts them showing up for signings and photography, or if that's just going to be, like, if it's just panels? Like, because I know some of our smaller cons that we attend, like, yeah, they don't have big panels, but they do have a big celebrity, like, photograph and autograph section.
The actors can still attend Comic-Con. They just can't participate in anything other than autographs or have photos that are related to any products or projects or productions.
So self-promotion is fine, but project promotion isn't.
Correct.
Okay.
The interesting thing about San Diego Comic-Con, though, is it's been reported that among, say, the Hollywood publicists, SAG has said they prefer its members skip SDCC, and as it's not a directive, they can still choose to attend. It's just we'd prefer if you didn't. So again, it looks like, as both Annie rightly said, anything tied to a studio production is the line they must not cross.
I think there's also a certain element of San Diego is the big one out here, so I think that's also a part of it for that they're trying to make an effort of this is what these cons look like without ourselves being supported, sort of thing, which I think that's fair. I understand the move.
Oh, for sure. And I guess if New York Comic Con was the one that was on the horizon, it would be the same story for the East Coast.
Yeah.
Well, I think with that then, what we can say is San Diego Comic-Con is the one to watch, and that might give the landscape of things to come.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how these strikes resolve themselves, given some of the other comments that we've heard from both sides of this. It's I'm very curious to see how long this will take, especially with how long just the writer's strike in 2007 took.
Yes, and as much as I enjoy the content they produce, I think they have a right to do what they feel is needed for their work, and I'm going to try and spin this at home into it might give me a chance to catch up on series that I keep saying to myself, I will get to that, and I may have my hand forced of, there's nothing new coming, I actually have time to get to that now.
Yeah.
I did also see that there are a few of the people that are on the picket line saying to try and support your local theaters if you can, especially some of the ones that were struggling coming back from the pandemic, that they might, you know, if they're coming back from the pandemic, just getting things up and running again, and now there's going to be no new content, it's going to be very hard for them.
Well, yeah, I think we saw that in the recovery of main COVID, and I know in the UK the chain is called Cineworld, but I think the parent company is AMC in America.
Yeah.
And yeah, for such a big company, you saw the effect that had on them. So yeah, your small hometown cinemas, it must be panic inducing.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Well, I think with that brings us to a nice ending to our dissection of the news this month. So I'm just going to finish off with asking our listeners, what is it you'd like to hear us cover? If there's topics that you'd like to hear, ideas for segments that you have, interviews with club members that you might like to see, we encourage any and all feedback that you'd like to give us. We want to make this podcast for you, for what you want to hear. So on the forum where we announce new episodes of the podcast, there are feedback threads there, and you can always comment back in the thread itself if you have feedback on that particular episode. So with that, I'd like to thank you on behalf of myself and the whole team here for listening to this episode, and we will see you next month.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. If you'd like to learn more about the topics discussed on today's show, please visit www.mandalorianmercs.com. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated items are intellectual property of Lucasfilm. Copyright 2009 Lucasfilm Limited. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please email podcast@mercs.firespray.net. Until next time, happy hunting.